Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
With 5 daytime Emmy wins under their belt, After Forever is breaking new ground. Join us today with co-creators Kevin Spiritus and Michael Slade. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Spotlight On. Welcome to AfterBuzz TV. And welcome, Kevin Spiritus and Michael Slade, who is Skyping in from New York.
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, partner.
So let's introduce really quick.
Hi, I'm Kevin Spiritus.
Yay, and lovely co-host.
Michael Mattis. That's me, right?
That is y'all.
That's y'all.
So let's raise a glass.
Yes.
Gentlemen.
Start off with a toast.
Michael Slade, raise that coffee cup. Or whatever's in there.
He says it's coffee.
We want to do a congratulations for 8 nominations and 5 daytime Emmy wins. Let's go down the list. Winning for lead actor, Kevin Spiritus, supporting actress that went to Aaron Cherry,
yes.
Writing for digital drama series, that was Michael Slade and Kevin Spiritus, outstanding directing by Jennifer Pepperman, and outstanding digital drama series,
the big one,
After Forever.
Yes. Congratulations,
cheers.
Both
congratulations,
of you.
Everyone.
Hard work. This is some good.
This is Dry Rosé by Michael Schulberg.
Lots of Michaels in the room.
So many Michaels.
Yes, we want to thank Michael Schulberg. They were one of the gift suite vendors that was there at the daytime Emmys. So we want to thank them.
Delicious wine.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. They do.
We somehow still have bottles.
I know. That's because it wasn't in your house. Otherwise, it'd be gone.
I don't have any more, but it's okay. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That was on top of some other awards that you guys have won throughout the past year, too. You guys have won, you were won at Tuscany Web Fest.
We won best web series.
Yeah.
Out on Film Atlanta.
Yes, best web series.
LA Indie Film Fest. Mm-hmm. International Academy of Web Television and Indie Series.
Yeah, and the Indie Series Awards went to Ensemble Cast. And then the one before that.
Academy of Web Television?
Academy of Web Television.
Was our best actress, Katie Huffman.
Nice.
Yes.
All
international.
Right. So were the Emmys just kind of like the icing on the cake for you guys? was this like what you were hoping? Of course, you know, you want the wins, but.
Well, Michael and I always discussed, we didn't set out to just go for an Emmy. We had an idea for the story and we came together with a common idea of what we felt was important and personal to talk about and to say. And then when things started to happen, it's like, okay, well, who's going to complain about an Emmy nomination? An Emmy
win? Right. I mean, but it was so not on the radar when we began.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just sort of, you know, we refer to the show as The Little Engine That Could, and it just sort of took on this life of its own. And
so great.
Suddenly, oh yeah, 8 Emmy nominations. That's very cool.
Michael, talk about the organic experience of how this show started and was created.
It began. I ran into Kevin here in New York. I knew who Kevin was because I had written for Days of Our Lives, and I had actually the first time I joined that show was about a month before.
I think it was like 2 months before.
Craig, maybe yeah. 2 months before he was written off the show.
Yes, he wrote me
I had
off.
Nothing
no,
to do with that.
He says that, but who knows.
I didn't have that much power at Days of Our Lives, trust me. I introduced myself because though I knew him, the actors on the shows rarely knew the writers to look at it, to see our faces. And he said, you know, it was really fortuitous. I've been thinking about wanting to create a web series, and we should have coffee, which we did. And he said, the first thing Kevin said was, I really want to do a show about gay men who are my age, who are 50-ish. And that really intrigued me because we tend to disappear from the canvas of popular culture the way women tend to disappear after we're not the hot young things. And then we wind up back on as, you know, Christopher Plummer down the hall with a cat.
Nothing wrong with Christopher Plummer down the hall with a cat, but some of us are heading there right now.
You know, not fully realized. Anyway. Yeah.
Stereotypes.
And then we started talking about, you know, we got into discussions about, you know, what could this be? And Kevin suggested something, wanting to a single guy and he's dating. And I said, well, you know, why, you know, let's figure out why he would be single at 50.
And also just Michael said, from a heroic point of view, how can you get behind someone who's single? And, you know, out there, you know, what's the reason? What's the catalyst? And, you know, we start talking about, are we single? Or who here is single? And I said, well, I'm single because I can't, you know, get a date. How about you?
I said I was single because I had lost my partner to a horrible cancer diagnosis a couple of years before that. And, you know, and I kind of felt like I was in a place where I was ready to artistically explore some of it. Yeah. And Kevin and I talked about it. Kevin said that, you know, and he
I asked you if
said, well, if you want to go there, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I thought what a wonderful backdrop to have this person be single. And one thing I did ask you in that conversation we had was, do you still talk to Richard? Do you still talk to him? It was more recent than at that time. And you kind of looked at me and nodded your head and said, yeah, I do. And I said, I think there's a storytelling aspect to that, because I'm a firm believer that any relationship that, you know, when we're alive or when we're not alive, the continuation of the relationship happens, and you're still carrying that love in your heart or anger or whatever the case may be. You can get in the car and have had a fight and you're still talking to that guy back, you know, but
and you know, and when a relationship ends because of death as opposed to breaking up,
right.
You know, nobody has been a shit. You know, can I say that?
Yeah. You did now. Okay. As to quote Valerie Bertinelli.
Big ups to Valerie.
You know, nobody's, you know, you don't fall out of love with somebody because they've died. Mm-hmm. They're just not physically part of your life anymore. Mm-hmm. And so you know, the idea was not at that point to make it autobiographical about Michael's life or relationship, but what we took was the diagnosis that my partner Richard had gotten and the decision that with a very bleak prognosis that at best chemo and all of that could extend his life for some weeks or months, I'm done. I'm not going to do that. And it was that decision that we decided would be a really cool thing to use for Jason.
And I think once we kind of had that in place, like we figured out why Brian would be single and what was the, you know, background for that, everything kind of, and I hate to say this, magically just sort of fell into place, right? I mean,
yeah, we started talking about, well, who, you know, what does Brian do for a living, and and who are their friends, and who are his friends, and what are the relationships, and who does he work with? And, you know, it just, we had these great meetings, because Kevin was living in New York at that moment. And so we could go and sit and have coffee for hours and just
chat
about what's the world we're going to create.
Right. And certain elements of the story just started to tell themselves. And that's how we started to find. I said, you know, there's certain shows that start off with like a little introduction of each episode, you know, Sex and the City has one. And then we both said in his courtship of Eddie's father. And that's of what stuck as, you know, our opening.
And being a huge fan of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fortune of Eddie's father from childhood. And those wonderful images of Bill Bix being Brandon Cruz on the beach and the charming little things. And it was like, let's do an homage to that.
Yeah.
Let's do our version. Wouldn't that be a fun way to start our show?
And it kind of opened up a whole other part. I mean, the story just sort of tells itself through that. And I don't know. And then this guy put some incredible words in all of our mouths. So we bow down to that. Yeah.
Well, I know too, you had mentioned with the, was it the LA Indie Film Fest? That was an ensemble.
That was the ISA Awards.
ISA Awards. How did the ensemble come together? Because that's truly one of the most, going back to that word, magical parts of the series is the ensemble connection. Mm-hmm. It's not just the feel. There's a, there's such a solid, beautiful connection.
Kevin and I talked as we were writing, as we were creating, we did keep talking about, well, who do you think about, you know, who do you think about for this role? Who do you think about for that role? There were people he knew. There were people I knew. There were people neither of us knew who we just thought.
And Jameson Stern, actually, one of our actors, he said, hey, have you talked to Peter Kim? Like, have you talked to, you know, and one thing that I did bring up to Michael at one point, because he was really starting to get to know me and write for my
sensibility
and my, you know, my, some of my humor. And I said, who do we see as Jason? I mean, I had this idea of like maybe bringing back into the business, going after Mitchell Anderson, because he had retired many years ago. And he's been in Atlanta for about 20 years. So he's been away.
It's like 15, I
think. But. And I said, you know, Mitchell is a great actor, and he and I know each other. We have this great friendship, and I knew I needed someone in that part opposite me that I could just jump in with and really have no question about the connection. And we ended up having, I mean, he said he was not going to do it. I said, come on, read it. And then he read it. He went, oh my God, I'm going to do this. And just that journey and the chemistry that was started from there. And then from there, you know, Katie Huffman signs on, and Anita Gillette, and Michael Urey, who, by the way, in season two is going to knock some socks off.
literally or figuratively.
But you know, everyone, and then everyone signed up, and we did it, and we had a reading of it first to just sort of get the awareness out there. But I think,
but one of the things that was really amazing from day one is with, well, first of all, everybody we wanted said yes.
Yeah,
I mean, whether we knew them or didn't know them. I mean, people would read the scripts and say, you know, because in the world of digital, they're not getting, you know, they're not getting big budget motion picture salaries.
We're not?
yet.
But people read it and said, I just want to be part of this.
That's amazing.
And that was true for our crew as well. Right down to the kids right out of film school who were, you know, lugging equipment around. People and just it
something it, there it was an energy the to
most
us.
Magical
there was
a, experience.
Yeah, and
respect.
And I remember even from the first day, our first day was the bicycle scenes outside on the river and East River. And you know, we were like feeling it out we stepped into this energy and just everybody was like, you know, okay, throwing our hats over the wall and we're going to chase it. And I don't think we had any bad blood on that set at all.
No disgruntled. And people who would come even days they weren't shooting just to be around, or, you know, it was that kind of thing. And, you know, and crew people who went out of their way, you know, said, oh no, we don't need to take a break. Let's just keep doing this, 'cause this is really good.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Pepperman, who Michael had worked with on, was it One Life?
One Life to Live.
You know, she was a producer, she was a director, and she was a writer too at a certain level. And she gave us such an amazing skeleton of what she was thinking of doing. And then we get on the set and she goes, oh, let's just change it and shift it to this. But she was like on it, boom, boom, boom. And we just sort of stepped into it. So there was this great connection to the work that she was seeing and visualizing and helping us through and having a really great eye on to keep us on point. And, you know,
and one of the things that was amazing too is when we sought out Jennifer, as you know, we had talked, and Kevin, you knew her, right?
Or I had met her several times, and then I went to see her
right.
short film.
She had an indie film,
and I said, I love her
and you know, when we talked about it, it was Jen's really smart. Jen's really great, and also coming from with a long history in daytime, Jen knew how to shoot quickly, and having, you know, we were going to be on a really tight schedule with a lot to shoot, and but then we married her with our DP, Colleen Kwok, who comes out of the indie film world.
Yes,
so
thank God.
The two of them, you know, they took a little, you know, pre-production time to figure out their vocabulary, but then we were getting sort of the best of both worlds.
So how did the indie world and Jennifer's daytime experience, why was that such a perfect match?
Well, I was going to say something right off of Michael and it'll go to you. It's she had done this short film that she wrote and directed. And
she's Jennifer.
Jennifer,
yes, okay. I'm sorry, Jennifer. And she had used some people from Days of Our Lives. Austin Peck was part of it. And I went to see this film and I was like, she can do one camera. Like, you know, on the soap, you've got three cameras. It's snap. But she had this eye and she knew where to take things. And she'll always tell you, you know, if I had one more minute, if I had three more hours, if I had two more days. And I said, you got exactly what we wanted in the amount of time. So I think it just bridged beautifully. And I think that her spirit is, she's got a great eye. She knows what she has her vision. And it was in sync with what Michael and I were looking for. And we all kind of taught ourselves how to look at this story and to create it from the magical sense of reality, flashbacks, and then all the part that Jason's in Brian's mind, you know.
Because that was difficult to navigate. You know, what's reality? What's
you mean when you were
the
watching
flashback?
It?
No, oh. I'm saying as a writer, you know, in creating these worlds, that's a big challenge because as a viewer, at first I didn't understand what was happening, but that's normal.
Right.
Yeah. That's what you wanted.
Yeah.
That was intentional. Yeah. And then as I was entering the dawning room, it's like, oh my God, this is horrible.
And I had seen you just after that and you're like,
yeah.
And one of the things was, you know, and Kevin and I talked about this a lot, was we trusted that the audience was smart enough that they would take the journey in the right way and that we didn't need to do special effecty things or, you know, any of those blatant ways of saying, oh, we're here, now we're there, that, you know, and I remember Kevin and you were quite vocal about it, and which I appreciated. Let's trust the audience. Our audience is going to, they're going to figure it out at the rate they figure it out, and then they're going to go, oh my God, this is so cool.
Yeah, and about that first episode and the pilot episode, there are things that we specifically put in so you could go back and track what it was that, oh wait, that's, you just didn't know where it was in the story. There were also things that we had written that we ended up, and we filmed, but we ended up cutting them because it was not necessary to repeat a moment, or there was a long shot of something happening. And by the time that shot got halfway through, I was like, okay, I already know what's happening next. So it was really,
You have the wonderful experience of, you know, that you just, which is the great thing about acting, you know, having this caliber of actors, where suddenly somebody has said something with their eyes that,
yes,
that eliminates the need for the next three lines because it all happened.
Or they steal the scene by saying something in as a response, and they go, they get the last scene, they get the last cut of that scene. Katie Huffman. Anyway, twice.
But who's counting?
And actually, Katie, you know, she's this Tony Award winning actress from Broadway, from the producers. And I think she was the most free she has ever been in a part. Don't you agree, Michael? I mean, that whole cake thing where she's cutting the cake and it's written, but she went for it and she's just licking the knife and slicing the hand.
But the other thing that was, I mean, and she talks about this a lot, and in episode three of season one, when the flashback of Jason telling her, his best friend, that he's dying. And, you know, she says, you know, that was the first day that she and Mitchell were working together. And they literally met 10 minutes before in hair makeup.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm Mitchell.
We walked on set. And they just walked in, and the two of them had done such actor work as preparation.
Yeah.
You watch that and you from the moment they look at each other, you know they've been best friends for 20 years yeah. or 30 years.
I think that scene, and you and I've discussed this, I think it's the centerpiece of the first season. I really do. I still get emotionally charged and choked up by it and triggered by, and you know, this one, I'm pointing to Michael. He's not in the room, but, I was on set and he was off set watching the monitors and whatnot. And every once in a while I'd see him leave the room and I knew that a chord had been hit and it was really, but that was great.
I remember watching the first season and just, I think it was afterwards, taking a step back from the journey and really loving the fact that this isn't a gay story. You know, this is a universal love story. And I was so excited to share it with everybody because of that.
Yeah. It's told through gay thematic outline.
Well, it's told through a gay couple.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
But it's that love. Thing that... that
yeah. It's relatable to anyone.
Gay couples, gay people forever have watched hetero movies and television and found a way to identify with those stories and watch them. And I think it's such an amazing statement about where we have come societally, even though some days it doesn't feel like we've come here lately, that
that's another talk show
that we are where people, you know, that people are identifying with the relationship, it's, you know, and watching it because of that.
Well, yeah, and you talked a little about the reach of it. Talk a little bit about some of the feedback you've gotten from the viewers, not just, you know, here in the United States, but you guys have a worldwide reach now since you're on Binge Network.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about the feedback.
Thank you for the plug.
Absolutely. Hey, you know.
Hey, man. By BingeNetworks.tv.
Oh, BingeNetworks.tv.
.tv.
Internationally.
Yes. Internationally, yeah. So talk a little about the feedback and if any feedback you've gotten really, really stood out or resonated. You can answer one at a time or together. Or...
Well.
Go first.
Okay. I mean... there are people, I'll say this, anyone who's online and they go to our website or they go to Facebook or they are on IMDb or even on Amazon and they leave a review, that one review I feel is always representational of thousands because there's people who don't review it, but they're thinking it. I have a friend who I was at a show with the other night, and someone came running up to me, and she goes, I'm in the Academy, and I voted for your show, and I just have to tell you, I didn't – she's a female producer, and she said, I didn't care what sexuality it was. It was about love. You guys had this connection, and everybody in the show, and I've dealt with loss, and she was just – she was electric about it. And then Michael had seen this letter about the kid who watched the kid
– Young man.
Young man. Who had? He said, "I think."
He said, watching the show, I finally understood what my father must have been going through when my mother died.
I mean, that's just the reach is,
and you know, and we get from men, from women, from gay, from straight, from young, from old. That's what's so amazing in our feedback. And people who write, there was a gentleman who wrote, I lost my partner, and watching this show helped me through some of my grief.
Yeah.
It showed me there is something on the other side of where I am right now. And you know, when you as an artist, you want to, I mean, it doesn't get better than that. I mean, you want to be touching people. You want to be making a difference to people. And it feels like we do. And it feels, you know, I mean, the volumes of response that we get from people who, you know, are touched because of it has helped them deal with some loss in their life or love in their life or that have said, I needed to show this to three other people. I'll just quickly, I got a letter, an email a week or two ago from someone who I know who's in the Midwest, and who her her husband's family were all, her brothers-in-law were all visiting for a few days, and one of her brothers-in-law is gay, and this is a couple who they're older. They're probably in their 60s, and and she said, and I decided that as a family we should all watch your series.
Oh, really?
She said, yeah, she wrote this. She said, because I thought it was important that we all, you know, and she said, and afterwards, I felt like the other siblings all started to understand my gay brother-in-law in a new way.
Wow. Let's send her a flowers.
I mean, so yeah.
But
so,
I also want to quote Michael Slade and on his beautiful acceptance speech for best writing when we were up there, which I was convinced we were not going to win when they had grabbed me to go backstage and get ready to present. I said, how are they going to – I mean, I'm not going to be available to go on – you know, anyway, we won.
but,
you know, he said so beautifully I think it was the night we won that, or it could be when we won Outstanding Drama, but you said to take something that is traumatic
take the most horrible moment
and
in
make
your
something
life.
Beautiful out of it, and I think yeah, but and we did. I think I feel very very proud of that.
And I know too that this moment today is all tying into Pride Month, mm-hmm. and you know mm-hmm. the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, and also in regards to the Pride Parade, it's going to be the first time it's ever been aired live. Which is groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's pretty
and,
yes.
you know, there are fingers crossed that it'll become a tradition, just like the
Macy's Parade.
Yeah, just like the Macy's Parade and that sort of thing.
You mean it won't be the news clip of, here are the four or five groups of people who are in there.
they'll probably have to fuzz out the bear arses, you know what I mean?
Or not.
Are they going to do the 50th, they're going to televise the one in New York or here?
Here.
Oh, here yeah. too.
Here. Oh. Is it New York as well? I don't know about...
I'm not sure. Michael, do you know if...
I'm not sure. Ours does not tend to be... It has never been televised.
Right. Yeah.
So,
and we are going to be in a film festival at the Columbia Film Festival in Maryland that weekend. So we're not going to be near the parade, unfortunately. Okay.
But yeah, the Pride Parade here in LA that takes place in West Hollywood is being televised on ABC7.
Wow,
for the first time. It used to be. I think it used to be televised on the West Hollywood.
Yeah, right.
The
local
TV.
The
local. But yeah, now it's going
cable
going right.
Access.
So for the first time, so that's a great step forward.
Yeah, no. I think the whole movement,
also makes it show. I mean, because I don't. I mean, I know what the New York coverage of the New York parade.
That's what I was saying. Right.
And it's true. I mean, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but it's. It's they'll show a couple of drag queens mm-hmm. and they'll show the guys on bikes
and some leather daddies,
you know, and maybe a couple of guys in thongs.
Mm-hmm.
And
sounds right.
Which is great. I love all those people, but it's also they don't show the 10,000 people who look like everybody else who's
right.
watching television.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the parade being fully televised lets everybody see the breadth of what the gay community is like the straight community. It is right. There are all sorts of people.
Mm-hmm. Hannah Gadsby, who has this incredible stand up on Netflix called Nanette, she always says as a child in Tasmania when she'd see the gay parade she'd go, "That's a bit busy. They're a bit busy, those gays," you know, and that's what Michael's referring to. It's definitely, it's always the very specific stereotypical
right.
grouping. Mm-hmm. But I think
and depending on where in the country clip is being shown, it can be even more stereotypical.
Right.
Do you feel like the message of Pride kind of gets lost in the party aspect? Because the reason we started Pride was because of, you know, our rebelling in Stonewall.
Right.
You know, that's the actual reason we started celebrating Pride. And to some, it's just a big party weekend. Like, do you think, you know, people need to be reminded of what the purpose of Pride is? Yeah, the roots, exactly.
Yes.
I would agree.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Absolutely. And I mean, personally, I'm speaking only for myself here, not for Kevin, that Is there a chair that keeps flying?
No, they opened the door. They opened the door. And, oh, okay. And now they,
there's a weird thing that happens on my screen. I also feel that the corporatization, though there's a great side to the fact that corporations want to acknowledge mm-hmm. that they are gay friendly. It's also starts to feel a little like we're being used okay. to, you know, be their shills.
Got it.
And that kind of annoys me a little.
I would just have to add.
Also, it. I hate that. I that it's always liquor company.
Yeah.
I
mean, yeah.
Some besides liquor companies mm-hmm. that the gay community.
I also have to say, purchases. The three or four times in the early years when I was in Los Angeles and sort of dipping my toe into the community and feeling comfortable with being out. And mm-hmm. It was exciting, but there was always this background excuse to be, well, I can drink and be sloppy. And I don't think every gay man and woman is sloppy. And mm-hmm. I don't think it should breed excuse or reason to, well, I get free, you know, whatever I want to do. I can touch and grab and do it. And it just got a little... got a little messy and unclean for me in that uh-huh. genre of parade etiquette, if you will. And I feel, you know, to me, we're no different than the next person. No one. And I think pride is a great way to make that distinction, but I think it also separates. And I think any reason that we find separation or segregation within our communities, within our classes, within anything, it just separates. So it's doing greatness, and it's also like, let's balance it out a little bit.
You know, there's a film that's going to be coming out June 7th called Papi Chulo
mm-hmm.
with Matt Bomer. And it reminded me of After Forever because it's a small little story that takes a universal theme, has a huge heart, resonates across the board. And I wondered, as we start to see more of these stories, are you too inspired to create more
of After Forever, or more
not just
stories?
After Forever, but are you inspired now that, you know, things are changing, the landscape is changing? Yeah. It's open arm. Well, it's much more open arm.
Absolutely. Arms. Yeah. I mean, remember when Brokeback Mountain
yes.
came out, and the just, you know, the how well all of the actors who turned it down, first of all,
right.
all of before it got in the years that they were trying to get it made. Then when it came out, the whole just cultural explosion about it that happened, and probably the Oscar it did not win because of its subject
yeah.
matter.
Right.
And then now, you know, I mean, you know,
well, if you look at
Call Me By Your Name,
yeah.
and I mean, all, I mean, there are, you know, there are dozens of movies out there now, and it's just accepted, and it's and I think it's terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's what I was saying before about we have come a great distance.
Yeah. But the mountain is still there to be
yeah.
climbed, and I think it's also it's reflected in I mean, Netflix and Amazon have numerous stories now that have gay characters, gay content, mm-hmm. gay storyline, and yes, we are continuing with season two.
Yay!
and we are starting that in September.
Awesome.
So that's.
Are you in like the writing state? You said you were going to be scouting. But...
Oh, we're scouting locations. We've written it.
It's written. It's written.
Oh, awesome.
We're in pre-production.
Yeah.
To the early pre-production to start shooting in September.
And the cast, everyone's gathered to come back.
Awesome.
And there's some newbies.
And some new people.
And some socks and, being knocked off.
There you go. But I also want to say too. You know, one of the great things, and I think the wonderful thing about still feeling the high from the Emmys, you know, we became the first
the
LGBT,
most Emmy awarded gay
focused LGBT focused drama to ever win 5 Emmys.
That's awesome,
right? And that means not only digitally but cable and mm-hmm. network and, you know, film. So 5 Emmys, boom, count them.
Do you feel a sense of responsibility that comes along with that?
Yes.
He said, "Very no time."
I feel inspired by it because Michael and I. There was some really great competition at the Emmy Awards this year. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Giants because it's a great way.
Yeah.
They found a way into telling story about their community and their world. And you know, Michael and I were like, oh, they're in our category again.
And, well, they tended to, at the other award shows, they, you know, we would each have the two leading numbers of nominations.
Yeah.
And we would walk home with one award.
And like, wah, wah. But, you know, but to celebrate their awards was also exciting for us because it's we were all there together.
Yeah. And it was groundbreaking.
And
yes.
You said, actually, you know,
ISAs.
At the ISAs. That, you know, and it's so true that one of the things that's been incredible about this digital explosion is that it's allowing people to tell stories that weren't being told because powers that be didn't want to tell them.
And we were not waiting for permission to do it.
Exactly.
And that was the one thing when I first met Michael that day at the gym, I just sort of like pitched. I said, hey, let's do something. Let's do this. And he's like, whoa, wait, let's talk about it. And I said, no. And so, I mean, I think preparation meeting opportunity is a way of, you know, that's luck. It's karma, whatever you call it. But I think it's really, this show, I think, was supposed to be born. And I think it was supposed to be made. And I think it was supposed to carry our personal experiences to the world. And, you know, I'm grateful. And this man who I work with, Michael up on the wall, you know, I said it the night of winning the lead actor, it's a healing for me to work together with him. And God, he's a mean teacher when it comes to writing. Write those thoughts down, Kevin. Taskmaster. He said, Taskmaster, write those thoughts down, Kevin. I'll review them.
Oh.
But he's good. He's like, where's that going to take us? Where's that going to branch out to?
Well, I know one of the things that, you know, except for Michael Mattis, who's the baby of the group.
But he's a very mature baby.
He's a mature baby.
He's my buddy.
Chronologically, he's the baby of the group.
He's great.
I try.
I am so excited about this series and this show because, as you said in the beginning, it focuses on men of a particular age and, you know, me being a woman of a particular age. And
34.
Thank you. God bless you. Checks in the mail. That this story was born when it was ready to be born.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's such a beauty in that and a power in that. What do you have to say to folks of that particular age who have stories that haven't been told yet?
I just want to say, Michael and I would say, come on, we got to get these scripts ready. We got to get them finished. And he goes, Kevin, they're going to be done. And we're going to get this done. And we're going to film it when it is exactly supposed to be. I'm like,
you're like, no.
And I'm a schedule man. Mm-hmm. And Michael is not a schedule man. But he's more of a free, let's ride the wave. It'll be presented. Mm-hmm. And then we just sort of found.
I'm more of a.
Whatever.
I want it. And if it means taking an extra.
Yeah.
Month or 2 months or 6 months.
Right. I know.
To get it right. You know, let's get it right.
Yeah, I want to do it
but
now.
In response to your question about the of a certain age. First of all, I think that one of the things that we wanted to do, and I feel very proud of what we've done, is that remind people and that there is life after 30 for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and it's vibrant, and it's not. You know, it's full and it's vibrant, and in many ways, Mike, you'll learn this at some point. Richer even than when you were younger, because all of that experience leads to stuff. You know, it's like a play of mine that went in its early drafts was all about a 20-something couple, and the secondary characters were the parents, and it kept not working, and it kept not working. And finally, I realized, oh, you know what the problem is? The parents are such more interesting characters. They've lived longer, and there's so much more there. And I shifted, shifted the focus of the play, that the parents became the focus. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it worked. You know, there's something to be said about, you know, when there's so much to be learned from from having lived a little bit longer. And I think also as it's important that there are role model, there are popular culture role models out there for people to negotiate next levels of age. And I think that's something we're doing without it being a calling just because we're telling the story.
And I just looked at the logo after Buzz TV and I went After Forever, but sorry, it just sort of popped out of me. I think also there's the thing that I feel really, really positive about and that Michael and I have really stood strongly together about is it's just a story. It's a love story. It is a story about love, loss, and new beginnings, and it cloaks everybody everywhere. And the more we just stand in that, and it's personal, I think everyone can react and respond to what's personal in their lives. Same thing. So I'm really proud of that. And it's is it a responsibility? Yeah, I guess maybe. I don't know.
I think art is a responsibility.
Yeah, that's
fair. I think there's a particularly in times of great cultural or political upheaval.
Stress,
That's another talk show.
we could do hours on other stuff.
And I know, too, that I think After Forever is part of the trend, hopefully a continuing trend, of films that are being made, television shows that are being made, whose focus is on story.
Well, Michael, the thing that Michael loved about the web series, the short form,
the format,
is that we were able to tell a story, almost like a full movie, in these 10 to 12 minutes. Some of them are a little bit shorter, some of them are longer. But that was the real challenge. And, Michael knows how to create, great drama, great arcing of characters and storyline and the theme. But I just thought that was the most rewarding. And I think if you would have told us 20 years ago, we could have done this on our own. It'd be like, no, they got to wait till the studio says that.
It's also one of the great things about the things that was a great experience in this in was once we made the commitment very quickly that we were going to do short form, which was based upon economics, as I think, as much as anything else at that point.
And attention spans.
Good point.
But there's a lot of short form content out there, and some of it is really good, and some of it's less good. And it was sort of exploring it and trying to figure. And where it was really good for me was seeing something that a 10-minute episode or a 7-minute episode or 15, whatever it was, felt like you had watched a whole episode, not like you had watched one scene and they're calling that an episode, and now we'll watch the next scene and they're calling. And so it was very important when we created these episodes for us to really feel that our audience was going to have a fulfilling experience with each one, and that they then lead to the next and then they all tie together, but there's a beginning, there's an arc to the episode, there's an arc to the day in each one of them, and I think it's something we accomplished quite well.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
How is the support with Amazon Prime been?
They have been invited to invite us in to become the full family. We actually self mounted this onto their platform. There's a way you can do that.
Sure.
And, it only on Amazon. It only shows in UK and the
and
USA,
US.
And that's why we also had the binge networks, which is
to make
worldwide.
It worldwide.
And because I hear there are some gays down in Australia have had some loss.
Oh, you heard.
But I think it's we're in talks. We're in talks with them and some other people too. And
awesome.
Other platforms.
Well, I'm sure the daytime awards have give you some momentum.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, they have. And it was also great to be in our world, to have friends of ours from Days of Our Lives. Mm-hmm. And even though One Life is no longer there, they're now over in GH. It was just great to have the whole family there. And I think back to the responsibility, it is a new beginning for all of us. And that's why I said, I'm 56. I have a dream. I have a vision, and I have a want, and it's never too late. So that's to me like the new beginning, because it's always starting over. It's always continuing. And Michael said, remind me how old I am. Thank you, Michael.
I'm not the one who just said 56.
I know, no. I said, embrace it, embrace it. No. But I'm really proud of it, and I'm really proud to be able to.
But I know, and I think that that's really important, you know, I do think, we're laughing about it, but I think, you know, it's in an industry and that's so doesn't tend to celebrate people acknowledging age.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't see anything coming down the pike with my name on it anyway. Mm-hmm. So when Michael was game to create something together, we had this great idea. And I went, okay, great. So this is what we're doing next.
So a couple of things before we wrap. Mm-hmm. Season 2, when can we start to...
Well,
we
start filming in September.
Okay.
And we are, fingers crossed, we will get it out by the end of 2019.
Okay. Wow.
Awesome.
That's aggressive.
Yes. Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Are crossed really, really hard.
Our eyes are crossed, our legs are crossed, our toes are crossed, and some of your parts are crossed.
Okay, perfect. Yes. Michael Slade, where can people find you on social media?
Oh, gosh.
Facebook. Michael Slade, yes, Facebook.
As Kevin likes to laugh, I'm sort of a professional Luddite. The fact that I am Skyping with you right now
is a technical really wonder. So,
this, this, yeah. is, this
people
is,
who know and love me are probably just
amazed. You know, like, we had 3 trials. No, it's okay. Turn on the computer, Michael.
No, I am on Facebook. I also have a website, michaelsladewriter.com.
Perfect.
That I have to apologize is not up to date. surprise.
But he's been writing season 2, so this is really good. It's okay.
Awesome.
Kevin, where can people find
you? Well, I'm at kevinspiritus.com. I'm on Facebook at Kevin Spiritus. I'm at Kevin Spiritus. Twitter, Instagram, but you can find us easily. Both of us can be found easily at afterforevertheseries.com or on Facebook at afterforevertheries. And thank you guys for having us on.
Thank you for coming.
Oh my gosh.
Michael, where can folks find you?
Oh, you can find me on the gram at ML Mattis or on the Twitter at ML Mattis 1.
And you can find me on Twitter at Tammy Govea and Insta Tammy.Govea. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was
after
so
forever.
Great.
Forever.
So great. Season 2.
See
Season
you, Michael.
2.
See you again.
Bye, Michael.
Thanks,
thank
everyone.
You so much.
Bye. Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.